Welcome back to the Ramble Room. Glad you're here. We really appreciate your faithful listening and your comments, your getting back to us. We really appreciate our audience. If you go back through the archives, you will find that back in April of this year, 2021, we had some shows focusing around Medicaid expansion. And I want to bring this back up as another topic because at the end of this month, the 29th and 30th of September in Casper, and the details of the arrangements are yet to be set up, the Joint Revenue Committee will be meeting, and one of the topics that they'll be discussing is Medicaid expansion. I wanted to share with you, first of all, some comments that I made last time that this discussion came about. And I want to use that to kick off some comments of some things that we didn't share before that were kind of on the cutting room floor. When the Joint Revenue Committee met last time in May, it was May 10th and 11th, a number of people came forward to testify, and I want to share some of their testimony. What this show is going to consist of is, first of all, the comments that I made that I wish to share again, to reiterate. And then I want to back that up with some comments by Kathy Eide, Senator Anthony Bouchard, Representative Bob Wharf, Jimmy DeLees, Carl Allred, and Cassie Craven. There's been an awful lot of talk about what this might cost, how it might affect future generations, etc., etc. The numbers are interesting. The numbers generally are wrong. We've seen that over and over again. The estimates very seldom come out to be accurate in retrospect. But I have to say, quite honestly, I'm not interested in the numbers. I'm a man of principle. The numbers to me don't matter. Even if you could prove to me beyond a shadow of a doubt that we were going to make money off of this process, I would still be opposed. And the reason that I am opposed is because government has no business whatsoever in healthcare. Government is the one that has come in and screwed everything up by disaffecting the free market. It twists everything, it throws everything out of balance, and then nothing is real anymore. I believe in free market capitalism. I believe that when there is a need, someone will show up, find that need, and fill that need, and do it far more efficiently and more carefully and more graciously than governments will ever do. As I said, government has no business whatsoever in healthcare. You can't find it in the Constitution. You can't find any justification for government to come there. We've been talking for the last several episodes at various times about the concept of liberty and responsibility. If we are to be truly a free people, we must therefore take responsibility for ourselves. That's what we need to get back to. We can't do it all at once. We've become addicted to the government teat, and we have to slowly break that addiction. I don't believe we can go cold turkey. But the answer, when we start to have a problem and we realize that people aren't being properly cared for, isn't to add to it more of what has caused the problem. The answer is to begin to withdraw from that. So step by step, we need to withdraw from a dependency upon government to take care of us. That's critical. No matter what the numbers say, the idea that we increase our dependence upon government to provide for something that we need to care for ourselves for is wrong, and therefore I would not support any expansion of Medicaid. Well, you're unfeeling, aren't you? You just don't care about people. I'll tell you what, I care more than most people would believe. I care deeply about people. I care so much that I don't want to see them become dependent upon a government agency that doesn't give a rip about who they are or what their circumstances are. We would be much better served to allow the free market, to allow churches, to allow any organization of compassionate people to come in. I happen to have, through my employer, a fairly decent health care plan. My wife, Diane, recently retired, and she no longer has that health care. We found an alternative to that, a free market alternative to that, where Christian people get together and share each other's health care costs. My insurance costs the company that I work for somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,200 to $1,500 a month. Hers costs us about $175 a month, and the coverage is pretty much similar. If we took government out of the healthcare business and simply allowed the free market and compassionate individuals to find a need and fill it, we might be amazed at the type of things that could be accomplished. I do not support Medicaid expansion because I do not support more involvement of government in our business. The conservative principle stands for smaller government, less government, fewer taxes. We talked about Walter Williams. We talked about his concept that to take forcibly from one person to benefit another is tantamount to slavery. That's what I'm talking about. Medicaid expansion is enslaving more of us to pay for those who naturally will just find the easy way out and say, okay, I'll go ahead and accept that and not provide for themselves. And by ceding that responsibility for themselves, they also cede a good portion of their liberty. I am in favor of liberty. I am in favor of freedom. I want a small government. I want fewer taxes. I would never support any expansion of government involvement in medical anything. First of all, here's Kathy Eide.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kathy Eide. I'm calling in from Casper. And I'd like to just address my opposition to the Medicaid expansion. It's manifold, my reasons, but my main concern is the expansion of socialism in Wyoming. This bribe that the federal government is offering with its expansion funding is not something that will make Wyoming stronger. It is a bribe that masquerades as a compassionate string to bind us together. But in reality, it's a rope that will choke our state, with socialized medicine becoming more deeply entrenched in Wyoming. There's been a lot of conversation today about negotiating with the feds regarding the terms Wyoming would be agreeable to, but I find this extremely troubling, as socialism in any amount is something Wyoming should never find attractive or agreeable to. Today, our nation is almost unrecognizable compared to its outset as a nation founded on faith, individual freedom, and self-reliance. We have become a nanny state that looks to government to supply our needs rather than looking to God and hard work. We have become dependent upon the federal government as our provider, as clearly evidenced by this committee's consideration of Medicaid expansion. I just urge you to stop the destructive advancement of socialism in our state and to oppose Medicaid expansion. Thank you very much.
Here is Senator Anthony Bouchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to talk about a couple of things that were from the health standpoint. Some physicians don't currently accept Medicaid patients, and others limit the amount they do accept. And it's because the reimbursements are so low. And it's a profit model, but Mr. Chairman, I think we know that doctors spend an incredible amount of money to be a doctor. And, you know, we could run them out of this state because there are markets that are much larger that they could operate in and have that model that they desire, to keep so much in there to make sure there's a profit in their business model. Moving to single payer, I got to tell you what's happening, Mr. Chairman, in this state right now is people are getting their entitlement checks. And they're not going to work. I mean, if you've been in town, you'll notice restaurants aren't even open right now because of that. They have tight hours. I've talked to several business owners. They can't even believe that this small stimulus check, in comparison to where the big picture is, has caused this problem. I think that more entitlements will create more of that problem in our government. What's really something that's not being looked at in here, when you go and tour some of the facilities that we have supplemented the brick and mortar part of it, you know, with government funding, there's a model built in, a number built in there to how many beds that they can put in with Medicaid because of the business model is bad. It's going to start sinking. And so I think what's happening is the consequences are if people move to Wyoming to get the benefits because for whatever reason they choose to move here, we're going to create another problem where even the brick and mortar is not going to be able to keep up with it. And we have a piggyback problem on top of an expansion. So if that makes sense, you'd have to expand the brick and mortar to actually compensate. And some of these are hospitals that I visited, one's in Buffalo with a nursing home. And they are very strict on how those ratios, what they do because of the losses and how much they're subsidized already at the state level. So that's the problem. But, you know, most of you have talked about an Article 5 convention, and some of you even voted for it. And we're always getting emails. Everybody knows very well that we're getting emails saying that we need to do an Article 5 convention so we can stop the federal government from out of control spending. But the problem is, it's not so much all on that end. Because the 1992 case, landmark case with Sandra Day O'Connor as justice, said that the federal government can't force the states to do anything, but they can bribe them. And I think that's what we're doing here. We're basically saying, and I apologize, but I mean, this is the image of what we have here. We have the carrot that's being dangled here, and it's the state legislature that either takes the carrot and expands that government spending, and they're printing money. We're going to run out. We're going to run out of space, but we're going to send to our grandkids, and they're going to pay this. They're going to pay for this. We and by the way, you talked a little bit about the what's happening with what's going to happen here is you've got that Unaffordable Health Care Act, which is severely taxed because instead of having a pool of workers, they have diluted it with a pool of people who need almost free insurance. And so you've got people that are paying crazy amounts of money to have care, even if their need is low. So younger people that make good money have to pay more just because they're there. So that's a shift in cost. And now what happens is I hear what they're saying. They're saying that, oh, we're going to pull some of those people out of ACH. I'm just not sold on that. I think what we're doing is we're going to move that whole cost over. And as more people drop off, you're going to have people at work, just like we're seeing right now. Entitlements are causing people to drop off of working. How many people will drop off of the so-called Affordable Health Care Act, how many people will fall off of there and drop into a full pay system and create an imbalance? And I think that's exactly what they wanted to do when they passed Obamacare. It was to make this structure go to a single payer. I mean, and talking about how we will be able to drop off of this system, Who's going to reverse entitlements once we hand them out? So I think that we should really talk about what we're doing here. We're taking money that's been printed in D.C., and we're taking that carrot, and we're going to expand another federal program in Wyoming that we will never see go away. And then the brick and mortar that we're going to have to pay to make sure that those hospital beds on long-term care, issues like that, where we weren't ready to pull more patients into our state. But if we build it, they will come. And that's why I'm saying that we should not move this forward. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Here is Representative Bob Wharf.
Most of you know me as Bob Wharf. I'm Representative Wharf from Evanston, Wyoming, and I am glad to be here with you today. I do come here in opposition of Medicaid expansion, and I can tell you my main, I guess, reason and rationale from this is I think back, I think right now, when I look at the amount of money the federal government is spending, I'm very concerned about how we just keep, and look at all the stimulus packages that have been submitted. I seen a segment, I think it was Saturday morning, and they were talking about having everybody send them all their wants because they got all this money that they want to put in a stimulus package and they want to provide it. And I think this is a similar thing. I think there's been an effort here to make it look as though we're not compassionate if we say we shouldn't be expanding this to everybody and to everything. I think it's a mistake. I just think back. I'm not that old. I'm not 60 yet. But I think back to the things we used to do as a country. And I look at the way we're going. If you don't think there's a hard push for us to become more socialist, you're not paying attention. And I think about all the veterans that went and fought battles in foreign countries so that we didn't have to give up the freedoms and liberties that we have. And I'm terribly concerned that with the actions that we're doing as we become more and more dependent on the government, which that's what I see Medicaid expansion doing. It opens the door to where we're dependent on them to give us health care. I remember when we spoke against ACA, the Affordable Care Act, because we did not want the federal government telling us what to do with our health care decisions and choices. In fact, we passed a law that said the government has no right to interfere with your health choices. And we saw what happened with this pandemic. It didn't matter. The government came in and told us what to do anyway. Now, I do think it's important. I want people to know I'm not heartless. I had absolutely no insurance when my son, who is 8 years old, was diagnosed with medulloblastoma. I mean, my family went through hell for a good 7 years while he was being treated. That's a cancerous brain tumor. Had no insurance, didn't know what I was going to do. I had just left a really good paying job where I had benefits. Went to work for a nonprofit where I was promised benefits and they never delivered. And all of a sudden I find out here we are, we've moved to a new community and we have no insurance and my boy's facing a life-threatening illness. And I can tell you it was not something I would wish on anybody. But the thing that happened then, I remember going down to Primary Children's Hospital. That's the closest facility for us. And I remember they made the comment, they had the ability to write a lot of our medical bills off. But we had numerous fundraisers that the community put on for my family. My family had been there less than a year. Or less than 2 years, but it amazed me that we'd had over a half a dozen fundraisers for on behalf of my family. I had people putting coffee cans out with a picture of my boy saying, please donate. And I can tell you, people rallied around us in our community. We had help from our church. We had help from other churches. And one of my biggest concerns is, and this is something that I see as government tends to expand, that the things we used to do as a nation tend to contract and they will evaporate and go away. And I ask, what are we doing? If we continue to expand government, the government's role in our health care, I think it's going to affect the doctors that go into that. I think you're going to see that they're not going to draw the most qualified, the people that really are hungry to be doctors, they're going to find something else because it's not just because money's the incentive, but when it becomes a thankless job, and I hate to say this, but you all know that. If it's given to you for free, you're not going to appreciate it as much as if you work for it. I think back to the old adage, give a guy a Cadillac and see how long it's till he's trashed that vehicle. Make him work to be able to buy that Cadillac and he's going to take care of it. And I think we've lost sight of that. That's how our country used to be. When somebody got down, our communities rallied around them and supported them. And that's my biggest concern, is that as we get more and more people that are dependent upon the government for assistance, what you're going to find is sooner or later, this system is going to break. We all have to see that. I mean, if you're not, I don't know how else to present it, but we can't keep giving away trillions of dollars as a nation. And I worry about the consequences. What are the repercussions? What happens when some of these other foreign countries that have invested in our country decide to call those notes due? I mean, I really think we're headed down the wrong road. I don't think we want socialized medicine. I don't think we want one-payer systems. And that's not where we're at, but that's where this leads us. I don't know how you can argue against that. And I can tell you, I know, because I've been following this issue for many years, and I know people have said I used to be against it, but now I'm for it. I think the principle still remains there. And I think that principle is that we were a proud, independent nation. We had people that were proud that we helped each other, we rallied around each other, but we didn't lean on the government for that assistance. And it is there. We need the government to do certain things, but I really think we just keep putting more and more on. And I do know there are alternatives. That's a criticism that I believe is valid. You know, for years we've been saying no to Medicaid expansion. But I don't think we've done enough to look at what alternatives are out there. And I guess I see this, I know it was talked about, you know, this is in the Revenue Committee. I think this isn't necessarily where I think it belongs, but that's where it is. And I do think that we have a duty and obligation to look. I think as a body, that's what we should be doing, is looking at those alternatives and not just saying no. We should be able to deliver something for the people that we all have been elected to serve. And so I get that's where we're at. That's what this Revenue Committee's been tasked with, is assessing Medicaid expansion. But I would just ask you to think about the consequences should this move forward. And I do. I can tell you, I see it as being baited into a trap. And I'm worried that the state goes that direction. Once we're in the trap, we're in the trap. And there's no way to get out of it. And I think it just will lead to the failure of this country, this nation. And I don't want to be the generation that sees it deteriorate to the point. I mean, we just saw what happened with the hack. If you saw it, I mean, it shut down the pipeline. We've got places that don't have fuel. I mean, it's crazy to think that this nation that had all these unlimited resources, that we can be brought to our knees. You know, and I just think there's too many things that point back to we're better off to get government out of health care. I think things were better. I look back when it was tough, and we were fortunate. We had lots of help, but we got through that trial. And I do. I just think going to this is a mistake. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to gobble up all your time. But I do think that's my point that I wanted to make this committee, is we're being told that there's all this money to be had by having the state enroll. I worry about, you know, all the medical people that are coming to this committee and saying, yeah, we need this, we need it. I'm sure they do need it. But I'm thinking that there's better alternatives that don't have the consequences or the risk that Medicaid expansion will bring to the state of Wyoming. Look at the other states that have done it, and it is bad. I tried to get the stuff from Utah. I know just from private conversations, it was forced. Utah was forced through a ballot initiative. They kept voting it down. It was approved. It is their number one issue now with their budget, is how are they going to pay for Medicare or Medicaid? And it used to be education. Now, you know our issues with education in our state. If you can imagine healthcare being more costly than our education, I think that's the direction this will take us.
My name is Jimmy DeLees. I live in Sheridan, Wyoming, and I also represent the Republican Women of Sheridan County, which is a group of over 100 women. And we adamantly oppose Medicaid expansion. I would like to first give you a personal example of a dire situation many, many years ago that happened to my daughter and son-in-law. They were students at the University of Wyoming. They had a two-year-old, and my daughter was pregnant. The baby was born very early, 5 weeks early, premature. They had to flight for life the baby to Denver Children's Hospital. And my daughter and son-in-law and their little boy had to stay at the Ronald McDonald's House. They were there for around 4 weeks. Then when they, there was a lot of medical care involved and so forth, they had no insurance. The hospital, the doctors, everyone that was involved, they all got together and they came to a price where no one would lose any money. The doctors, the hospital would not lose any money. They would make whatever money they needed to make to support their business. And they were given a payment system. And when my granddaughter was about 14 years old, my daughter called me and said, "Hey, Mom, just wanted to let you know that your granddaughter's paid for." And they made their payment, but whether it was 25 a month or 50 a month, or as they both began to make more money in their lives, I think they began to pay more back. But the thing is that there are other ways than going to the federal government. And sometimes the simplest and most obvious solution we think is the best, but it can be a trick that comes back to bite us. And as we've seen in states around us, just for example, we've talked about Montana. What happens is that we may help 25,000 people to start with, but there are people that are borderline where they might need something like this, that they will not try and advance their careers. They will try and have maybe less money so that they can get free insurance. And there are people that will take advantage. And the problem with the Medicaid is that the doctors and the hospitals do not get what they need. It can be 40% short of what they need. So what they have to do for the hospitals and the doctors to stay in business, they have to increase what they charge to to private insurers. Well, then the private insurers, they have to increase what they ask for the cost of private insurance. And it all becomes just this negative self-feeding cycle. And there are other solutions out there. And I really appreciate that with the young man, all the possibilities he gave before we talked to him. I believe it's a trap that the government, if they can get enough states to go into this, and what's going to happen is the price of private insurance is going to get so high that they'll come up with the wonderful solution and go back to this Medicare for all bit. Well, my husband and I are on Medicare, and what's happened that the price increases every year. Then now we have to have supplemental insurance. Now we have to have separate insurance for medication. And altogether we pay just a little bit under $700 a month for what people think Medicare for all is the answer. But we pay as much as we would if we were paying for private insurance. However, we're forced to be on Medicare because of our age, even though we were always on private insurance. And so this idea of free insurance, it's just a pit to fall into and give the government more control, and we would regret it. So I appreciate you hearing from me, and I appreciate you taking the time to consider all these things. Thank you.
My name's Carl Allred. I'm from Uinta County, Evanston. I know, well, you guys all know me, but I'm speaking on and against this Medicaid expansion. I mean, let's be honest, guys. It's socialized medicine. That's simple. And the other fact is that we just can't afford it. But when we try to bring and give free medical care to an expanded amount of people, I'm glad they brought up the Montana stuff, but all the other states are doing that. Indiana had almost bankrupted their state. And as the gentleman from FDA said that you can't get out. We can talk about if the federal government backs off from 90% that we can get out. We can't. Once you give candy to these people, you can't take it away. And the quality of healthcare will go down. You know, I've been to lots of countries that have socialized medicine. I mean, you even take our neighbors, Canada here. The people who can afford to have procedures done, they'll come to the United States and they'll pay for it. Even though they've already paid for it through their taxes up there in Canada, because they can't sit on a waiting list. I mean, you want a hip replacement? You might be 3 years out. So people come to the United States. When you look at some of the quality of healthcare, I mean, you take a look at, for example, I don't know if any of you guys are landlords. I've been before, and if you've ever owned Section 8 housing, it's great because you don't have to chase the rent. It comes in from the government. That rent check comes in. Well, I don't think any of you guys want to live in Section 8 housing because as long as the government's paying for it, we don't care about keeping, you know, top quality property. There's a lot of options we can go to rather than going to Medicaid. When people, you know, y'all pay car insurance. Well, what do you think that auto insurance would cost you if it paid for all your oil changes and your tire changes and, well, heck, you know, even your fill-ups of gas? You wouldn't be able to afford it. And that's what we're trying to do with health insurance. Years ago, when I first got started out, I had a catastrophic health policy. It didn't pay for doctor's visits. It didn't pay for basic medication, you know, prescriptions. But if I had a life-changing catastrophic event that put me in a hospital, that's when that insurance was there. And that's what insurance is supposed to be for. You take a look now, the health department showed the Oregon study there. Yeah, all of the visits and the medical doctor's things went way up once they expanded Medicaid. Well, because it's free and it doesn't cost you anything. You know, you used to be able to get a lot of care from my doctors. Nowadays, when I do get sick and I call and I want an appointment, they say we can see you in 3 weeks. Well, that doesn't do me any good. I need it now. But it's because there's so much free and there's people going to doctors for a lot of things that they wouldn't go for if they were paying for it. So rather than doing Medicaid expansion, we can look at some of these other options. And I do think it's quite ironic that this bill is in Revenue Committee. I don't know in what kind of world people think that Medicaid expansion is revenue. It is an expenditure. If you expand it, it's going to cost the state money. Yeah, even if the feds pay for 90%, which they're not going to always do because they can't afford it either. But it's costing the state that 10% right now. And every state that we look at that has done this, what they have is projected amount of people jumping on the Medicaid expansion. Those projections are wrong in every single state. You know, they talk about a much lower number here, but I've heard people that have looked at that and compared to other states, and we're talking more 45, 50,000 people on it. So it's going to cost us a lot more money than people are saying. And this is an expenditure. As Representative Vore said, you take a look at Utah, and now They're more concerned with Medicaid expansion cost than they are with education, which has always been the biggest single thing in Utah. As you know, they got a lot of kids down there. But this is something that could possibly bankrupt our state if we do it. We need to look more at getting the government out of medical and look at doing things that provide a little more transparency in billing. You know, for example, our hospital there in Evanston, it's said all over town, you don't go to our hospital unless you're going to die. You go to Park City, you go to Ogden, you go to Salt Lake. Park City, it's a beautiful hospital, and it costs about half of what Evanston cost us. Thanks. It says I'm out of time, so thank you for your consideration. And if anybody has any questions.
My name is Cassie Craven. I'm here on in behalf of the Wyoming Liberty Group today. I want to hit quite a few points, so I'll get going. The first one is, the question is, do we want to stand with states like South Dakota and Texas on this issue, or do we want to stand with states like Washington and California? The coverage gap was discussed this morning by the Department of Health, and I think the answer is clear there. The solution to fixing a broken federal system is not by signing up for more of the exact same broken federal system. They also admitted that the biggest unknown is enrollment, and that's what we've seen in other states. That's a direct quote from the Department of Health this morning. Thus, that $34 million that we've been promised as the revenue, which brings us to the lovely revenue committee this morning, means that that's not certain at all. And let's start with what happened in Montana and the misinformation that you've been told with regard to that state. Fact, after the first full year of expansion, Montana hospitals saw their hospital profit margins plummet by 40%. The head of the Montana Hospital Association directly attributed this to the cost shifting of low Medicaid reimbursement rates. The source for that, if you'd like to look it up, the Great Falls Tribune Becker's Hospital Review. Fact, after expansion, an independent study found that Montana had 12 at-risk rural hospitals. 100% of those were deemed essential to their communities, causing Montana to lead the nation in that grim statistic. Source, the Navigant study. Fact, Montana lawmakers were promised enrollment would cap at 59,000. It is now 96,800. That's a 64% overage. Source, KHN. CBPP, Montana State Medicaid Expansion Dashboard. Fact, Montana Medicaid spending increased by 65% between 2015 and 2018, raising it from $1.1 billion with a B to $1.8 billion. Sources, NASBO report year 2016, NASBO report year 2019. Fact, Medicaid share of Montana's total expenditures rose from 17.4% in 2015 to 26.4% in 2018. Sources again, NASBO report years 2016 and 2019. Also a fact, Montana has more truly needy individuals, the people that Medicaid is designed to protect, on a waiting list. Compared per capita to its non-expansion neighbors, Wyoming and South Dakota. Sources KFF. So what about the administrative costs? Let's talk about that. Fraud and improper enrollment. You'll need people to monitor this. So how does the state intend on planning to fund this growing government scheme where we need new auditors? Because it's a problem. CMS just released brand new data on this for 2020 and said, quote, national Medicaid improper payment rate is 21.36%. That's the amount of percentage points of fraudulent transfers. That equals 86.49 billion with a B dollars of improper payments. It's also interesting that the Obama administration canceled these same eligibility audits from the years 2014 to 2017, which were the first years of expansion. This maximized enrollment, which from the beginning has been the entire goal of Obamacare. It's never been about care at all. It's a socially designed system, which means you need high enrollment. It means you need the people that make the most money to pay for the people who make the least money. This steals our choice, our dignity, our common sense. We are not designed to be the bottom line for hospitals and for government. And that's what this is about. If you want to be on a wait list, if you want to not be able to choose your doctor, have the government decide if, when, and what kind of treatment that you receive, then this is the remedy for you. This is the policy solution for you. But as a woman, it's not the policy decision that I want. Our health care is our own. We are not the bottom line for them. This is not the proper role of government at all, unless you believe someone like Hillary Clinton, who thinks that health care is a right for everybody. And if that line of thinking is not the exact premise behind single-payer health care, I'm not sure what is. And I'd like to pivot for a moment and talk about abortion and transgender hormone treatment therapy. This is an issue that it doesn't matter what side of the line you fall on those things. It's coming. Senator Case asked earlier, can you actually imagine the feds saying that you must provide abortions? I can't. Well, I sure can, and the reason is this. On March 25th of this year, an act was introduced in our Congress. It's called the EACH Act, Equal Access to Abortion Coverage and Health Insurance. It has 127 co-sponsors in the U.S. House and 22 in the Senate. Pelosi and Schumer have declared it a priority. Kamala Harris has declared it a priority. It's coming and it will pass. This legislation would reverse the Hyde Amendment. It would guarantee abortion coverage in federal health insurance programs, but most importantly, it would prohibit interference from states or private health insurance companies to offer coverage for abortion care. It completely ties our hands. And in its statement, Planned Parenthood said, quote, "The LGBTQ community is still requiring access to healthcare, sexual and reproductive care, and other basic human rights that remain out of reach." The organizations pushing the Biden-Harris administration and Democrats in Congress to assure that taxpayer Medicaid funds are now able to be used for abortion and transgender hormone treatment in their clinics. This comes from their statements. I'm not making this up. You can look it up online for yourself. Planned Parenthood specifically lists these as accomplishments of the first 100 days of the Biden-Harris administration. Number one, move to reverse the Trump administration's Protect Life rule that created a clear boundary between abortion and family planning. They want to get rid of that. Number two, passage of ARP, which Planned Parenthood officials have said, quote, does incentivize states to expand Medicaid coverage by allowing increased federal funds. ARP did not include the Hyde or the Helms Amendment, which have traditionally prohibited these taxpayer monies from being utilized in that way. However, the FDA has already announced it will be lifting restrictions on the health and safety standards applied to abortion-inducing drugs, which are different from the abortion mechanisms we've discussed here today. That's already happening. Allowing for their disposition over telemedicine through the mail and the establishment of a gender policy council. So all of that is coming, and Medicaid expansion is a very clear carve out and role in that plan. Planned Parenthood said it's going to push in the days to come to get rid of the Hyde and Helms amendments, funding for sexual and reproductive health care programs at home and abroad. And as I mentioned in my testimony, when this thing died for the seventh time in history, there's a serious due process implication. And I'd love to know how that plays out when a young child is in the middle of his transgender treatment. Are we just going to yank coverage away? And if you'd like to refer to that act, I'd encourage you to look at section 2.2 of the EACH Act, which was introduced on March 25th, which says, quote, a person's income level, wealth, or type of insurance should not prevent them from having access to a full range of pregnancy-related health care, including abortion services.